Thank you. Thank you for inviting me here to speak. This is a second home for me, being with you. Thank you for inviting me to speak on the topic of justice. I'm incredibly moved by your activism and your generosity of spirit. You show up for people who are experiencing homelessness. You feel with them the effects of economic injustice, companioning, being present, bearing witness. Just before the Iraq War, there was a great moral emergency born out of the great despair of 9/11. My husband, Rabbi Ben Newman, had been in the city on 9/11. He lived on 24th Street and watched the towers falling that morning on his first day returning back to rabbinical school. The pain became song in Union Square Park that night, joined with other songs from every tradition, combined with the smell of incense rising to offset the smell of the burning buildings. Love, not hate, hope, not despair, trust, not fear, thoughts, ideas, convictions rose up and became music, which became message, which became action. Ben and I joined in the protests that filled the streets of Manhattan. Money for health care, not for war. Money for schools, money for children, not for war. God's power, koach, strength, was felt in the power of people filling the streets, people who felt the pain of that tragedy and were convicted in transforming their fear and their loss and their despair into the power for goodness. Many of you here, I'm sure, know that feeling of filling the streets and knowing the power of people, the truth of the power of the people. In that moment, when I broke through a police barrier, which is the closest I've ever come to being arrested, I felt this is the breakthrough we need, and we need that now. Please, God, we need a breakthrough. So what is the Jewish imperative for justice? Susanna Heschel, daughter of Abraham Joshua Heschel, cried out around the same time from the front of the famous Riverside Church in New York City. She called out, "My father taught me that Torah is not just about justice, is not just about compassion, about love, not about kindness only, not about truth even, but about justice. The Torah is about justice." She screamed, she yelled, and I will never forget. Simplicity, I know, is the theme of the month here. The first Jew, Abraham, received the command, really the raison d'etre for Abraham, was not just hospitality, but to do righteousness and justice. Mishpat v'tzedek, way back in the book of Genesis, even before the Exodus from Egypt. I often say that my childhood was not religious, yet my earliest memory is of stuffing doorknobs with flyers to re-elect our friend and neighbor for public office, among many acts that my parents took me to. This is a religious act. Simple as that. Voting is a commanded religious act, speaking out against hate, making conscious choices moment by moment, how we will spend our money, how we will use our voices, how we will direct our feelings. It's humbling for parents, for role models and teachers of young children, that is all of us, how much power we have to etch values into our children's beings. What would it mean to attribute these values to the sources from which they came? Back then, I couldn't quote the texts that my people learned to help them open their hearts to the sufferings of others. For Jews, much of our Torah comes from our trauma. We are taught again and again not to forget what we have been through. And yet how we hold this trauma and these stories, how we remember them, and how we live, of course, makes all the difference. Many of our texts, our liturgy, for example, were written when we were not in positions of power or privilege, and yet we were preparing for this eventual reality. What are the implications now for our times, now our people need to consider, now that many are in positions of power and privilege? I heard Bernie Sanders, this is not advocating for a candidate, I heard him speak at CSU, and I would place him in the lineage of the Hebrew prophets, whether or not he sees himself this way. And the rest of the Jews might argue about this, but afterwards, after we heard him speak, I said, Sophia, my daughter, my eight-year-old, what did you think of him, and did he seem like he was Jewish to you? And she said, you know, because everybody's arguing about how he's not speaking out enough about his Judaism, and she said, what do you mean? Of course he's Jewish. Mom, you say this stuff all the time. So I took that as a compliment, of course. Simplicity, right? The flaming courage and the thunder of the fearless voices of our modern prophets show us how to live the message of the ancient Hebrew prophets, who passionately remind us of the message of the Torah. Abraham Joshua Heschel was one of the most prolific, influential rabbis, thinkers, activists of the 20th century. He was born in Poland in 1907. He survived the Holocaust and was brought here by Hebrew Union College, brought to Cincinnati, Ohio, and then on to Jewish Theological Seminary, a conservative rabbinic seminary where he taught for decades in New York City. He believed that the future of America would depend on the impact and influence of Dr. Martin Luther King, with whom he marched in Selma. Heschel understood the Torah to be structured around consciousness building, countercultural efforts to respond to the dynamics of power and powerlessness, the tendency towards indifference and apathy. The Torah teaches us to build a society in such a way that we cannot be insulated from the grief and trouble and pain of the other. Drawing on his lived experience, he was an engaged scholar devoted to practicing justice and righteousness. Judaism's language, Heschel taught, is deeds, including affirming our interfaith and interracial alliances, that we might indeed walk in unison again. When he marched with his arms linked in Selma, he said, I felt my legs were praying. And when I marched this last summer, I felt Heschel in my legs, walking, praying, embodying the teachings of the Torah to pursue justice. My commitment to Judaism comes from the same place as my commitment to justice. And yet, we are a text people. It's very refreshing to not have as many words in the liturgy this morning as we have. And the book opens the way, I had to think which way the book opens. And it's in English. There's a certain advantage to that. So there's a debate in the Mishnah, which is the first legal text in the second century, the beginning of the Talmud, the rabbinic Judaism, post-destruction of the temple. There's an ancient debate regarding study and action. Which is more important, the rabbis argue, study or action? And they conclude that study is more important. But wait, because study leads to action. So the more we study people, texts, ancient, modern, our own, our families, the more we can embellish our values with the depth of story, and the more impactful and lasting will be our actions. Cornel West thought of Heschel as a soulmate, saying, and he said, justice is love in public. Where the rubber hits the road for a Jew is where sacred text meets sacred autobiography. They are one and the same. The Jewish understanding of this is that to know who you are in the greater story, in context, in relation to the stories of others, to know that is to know love, is to stand for and march for and even die for the other. Love is love, is love, is love, is love. The words of Lin-Manuel Miranda. Of course, each story is unique, each one crafted by and with divine goodness. The Jewish imperative for justice, of course, shared by Unitarians, comes from the yearning for the affirmation of the holding accountable to even more of that divine stuff. We've been created in God's image, each one, and we act from that place and that awareness. Ve'asatchem el kanfei nesharim ve'avi etchem elai. Exodus 19:4. I had lifted you up on loving eagle's wings and brought you back to me, and you will be my precious ones, for all the earth is mine. You will be my sacred family in touch with the divine. This song was written that I started to sing by Rabbi Jack Gabriel, who's now back in town, those of you who remember Rabbi Jack from the 90s. And I remember the moment when there are many moments, thank God, but there was one moment when I first realized that my story is mapped onto a larger story, that story of being brought out of Egypt, out of Mitzrayim, out of slavery. When we realize those, when we have those moments and we realize that reality, a great power is unleashed in us and in the world. For me, I had landed in the synagogue that my parents had left when I was a child because they thought the rabbi was too radical, along with their friends, and he became one of the most powerful, influential rabbis in. His name is Rabbi Larry Kushner. He took me in eventually when I made my way back to the shul that my parents had left, and that shul became my spiritual home. And I remember chanting the words of being brought out of Mitzrayim, out of Egypt, in order to serve the God that brought me out of my struggle and my spiritual loneliness. I had arrived. The divine love that I discovered pouring through me became the source of my liberation in the context of my people's story. And immediately there were great demands upon me, upon my time and my everything. For with great power does come great responsibility. The power of knowing this kind of love, the kind of love of spiritual community, with that comes great obligation. And for the Jew, this obligation goes back to the Abrahamic covenant and all the way forward to our moments of encountering God at Sinai, moment by moment. In the Torah, we're reminded 36 times, do not oppress the stranger. Ata yodea nefesh hager, you know the soul of the other. And when we forget, inevitably, our stories remind us. We are part of the God that frees slaves, and we are not yet free ourselves. God, as the power that makes for freedom, includes us on that journey, because none of us is free until all of us are free. And yet, in Judaism, there's the paradox. On Shabbat, on the Sabbath day, we have arrived. I asked Susanna Heschel directly, did your father ever do social justice work on Shabbat? On the Sabbath, there's so much work to do. How can you take a break from fixing the world? She said, never. He didn't even speak of the Holocaust. He didn't even, the Sabbath, his classic book, which everyone should read if you're going to read one of his books, his amazing books, the Sabbath speaks of eternity utters a day. It is a day where we dwell in the perfection that is possible for us to create so that we can be inspired to create that vision of a world redeemed the rest of the week. And so we are not yet free, and yet we have already arrived. The way we see time, as I mentioned, Shabbat and the rest of the week reflects this, and the way we see space as well. Sanctuary is a place where we've arrived. And then the rest of the places we go to, we work to make sanctuary. This is the justice journey. This morning I read a piece that I want to share. I don't know how much time I have, but it's very powerful, about Pulse as queer sanctuary. Pulse, like many queer dance spaces, was a place where people went to connect with their community, themselves, and the divine, a place to yearn for freedom and wholeness, a place to enact the world to come for a short time, a place that was no doubt as complex and flawed as any holy house of worship. Queer dance spaces are the only spaces where queer people can feel their power, feel whole, this is written by a person who's heard this from many, in a life where they never feel safe. The desecration of this queer sanctuary is all the more painful because it was a Latino queer space, a space for people who confront the magnified and multiplied challenges of being gay and Latino. As Latino writer Justin Torres writes, outside you are condemned. Outside there's a world that politicizes every aspect of your identity. There are preachers of multiple faiths, mostly self-identified Christians, condemning you to hell. Outside they call you an abomination. Outside there's a news media that acts as if there are two sides to a debate over trans people using public bathrooms. Outside there is a presidential candidate who has built a platform on erecting a wall between the United States and Mexico. And not only do people believe that stuff is possible, they believe it is necessary. Outside, Puerto Rico is still a colony, being allowed to drown in debt, to suffer without the right to file for bankruptcy to protect itself. Outside, world is unsafe. You have known violence. Outside, there are more than 100 bills targeting you, your choices, your people, pending in various states. You have known violence. You have known violence. You are queer and you are brown, and you have known violence. You have known a masculinity, a machismo, stupid with its own fragility. Outside, the world can be murderous to you and your kind. Lord knows, inside, safe, sexy, alive. But inside, it is loud and sexy and on. If you're lucky and the dance floor is full, if you're lucky, they're playing reggaeton, salsa, and you can move. Temporary liberation. Have to go back to the painful world. People talk about liberation as if it's some kind of permanent state, as if you get liberated and that's it. You get some rights and that's it. You get some acknowledgement and that's it. Happy now, but you're going back down into the muck of it every day. This world constricts. You know that what the opposite of Latin night at the queer club is? Another day in straight white America. Safe space, space for you. So when you walk into the club, if you're lucky, it feels expansive. Safe space is a cliche, overused and exhausted in our discourse. But the fact remains that a sense of safety transforms the body, transforms the spirit. So many of us walk through the world without it. So when you walk through the door and it's a salsa beat and brown bodies, queer bodies, you can't help but smile. This is for you, for us. Space for transformation and beauty. Space for life, not death. The only imperative is to be transformed, transfigured in the disco light, to lighten, loosen, see yourself reflected in the beauty of others. You didn't come here to be a martyr. You came to live, Papi, to live, Mamachita, to live, Hijos, to live, Mariposas. How can I hold you, witness you, beloved friend, neighbor, or maybe even thought becoming song, message, action, birthing itself, emerging from slavery to freedom, encountering source at the mountaintop, followed by a long and winding journey through the wilderness. Eventually, may we enter our land of promise together. When I spoke with Gretchen during the week, of course, right after Orlando, she needed some time and said, well, are we gonna do a vigil? She said, I need you to stand with me. And some of you were there on Monday night when we did. And I just wanted to, I didn't want to pray. I just wanted to get into action, right? Whatever it takes, this cannot happen again, enough. I said, Gretchen, I don't even want to pray. And she said, you have to. So I did, and those of you who are there, I chose to take the story, the words of Eddie Justice in text messages to his mother from the bathroom and chant them in Lamentations trope, the tune of the Book of Lamentations that we say on the most broken day of our calendar. And the heart opened, and the hearts open. And that's why we sing and we pray and we don't just act. So that when we do act, we're acting with the fullness of our beings, not closed off from ourselves and our feelings or those of the others. And this affirms the central truth of Judaism, that all is one. Shema Yisrael, Adonai Eloheinu, Adonai Echad. Listen, listen, everyone who struggles. You're part of the one. I am one. This is one. And I appreciated Gretchen for that challenge in that moment. And we did become one again as a community in Old Town Square. From this, we will act. Yesh lanu koach, we have strength. There is great strength in people coming together and acting for the sake of justice. Yesh lanu koach, the words are in your program. Yesh lanu koach, yesh, there is, lanu, for us, koach, strength.